Object lesson, a kloliistic lesson in the halachos of Sfira, which, in all honesty, I can't tell you that I fully appreciate and integrate yet. Right? We have a famous halacha that if one failed to count one night of the Sfira, so we go on counting all the rest of the nights but without a bracha. And the reason for this is because there's a machlokes in the Rishonim that what is the consequence of skipping a night? So the Bahag says the consequence of skipping a night is that's it, you can't be yotzei the mitzvah anymore. The Baalei HaTosfos would say that you skipped a night, so come back tomorrow night and you can do the mitzvah and you can make a bracha. So according to the Bahag, there's really no point in counting altogether anymore. So did you count without a bracha? You don't count, because that's it. You can't be into the mitzvah anymore. Now the Bahag is very, very severely a minority view. Overwhelmingly, the Rishonim do not agree. Even the Tosfos, Menachos, that quotes him, so doesn't agree with him. So I'm always surprised at how big a deal the Shulchan Aruch made of the Bahag's Shita. Good, so we held that way. The rest of the world didn't hold that way. So that's it. So I'll tell people be very careful, because according to the Bahag, you're not going to be hitting the mitzvah. And that's it, and leave it at that. If you skipped, go on counting the rest of the nights with the bracha. Obviously, the lesson from this is about how careful we are about bracha levatala. That even the slightest doubt about the propriety of making a bracha, we don't make. It's a hard lesson to fully appreciate. Now, we have another halacha. Suppose I don't know if I skipped the night. I'm just in a fog. I don't know what happened yesterday. Yeah. I haven't the foggiest idea. Did I count? Didn't I count? Don't ask me. It's just lost in the fog. So the halacha is that I go on counting with a bracha. Why do I go on counting with a bracha? Because we all have a halacha of sveksveika, the Mogen Avraham says. That maybe even if I definitely skipped yesterday, I can make a bracha. And even if I can't, but who says that I skipped? So that's enough reason to be able to make a bracha. Now, the Chayodim takes objection to this approach. Now, what they did was the Chayodim, in the beginning of Chayodim, I think in Klal Hey, if I recall correctly, writes that even if there's a svek svek in favor of making a bracha, you still can't make a bracha. It's still a shayla of a bracha lebatala. So he has a whole piece of Torah here to explain this mechaber with a different kuntz, with a kuntz. So we see even with a svek svek, it's not necessarily muskum, there's machloikas if you can make a bracha. So that just again underscores how careful we are about bracha lebatola. Now, I'm not convinced necessarily that in principle that the Mogen Avraham, we can prove that the Mogen Avraham disagrees with that position. Certainly not from here. Why? Because the Mogen Avraham could have made the following cheshbon. Daily, that we don't make a bracha, having definitely skipped the night. Basically, all of us would say, listen, we ought to follow overwhelmingly the Rov Deis and just forget about the Bahag. So the Shulchan Aruch decided to be skittish. So along came the Mogen Avraham and said, that's if all I have is one Shiloh. But if I have something to add to the other side, and it's so close to being over the line as it is, that the least addition to the other side, another Sopik, is enough to throw it way past the point that you have to be concerned anymore. But maybe a regular spek sveiko, when you started off, 50-50, twice over, maybe that's not enough. to make a bracha. But over here, you're basically starting with a 90 before you started. So for some reason, the Shulchan Aruch decided to be machman. Oh, if I can push it up a little further, daily, that's enough already. That could be the pshat in the Mogan of Rome. It's not muchrach, that in the klal, that he disagrees at this point. Not from this din, it's not muchrach that he disagrees. So this I always find fascinating. But the Shulchan Aruch was so enamored with the Bahag's position that he gave it such power in the halacha. And it so affects the whole Kiyama Mitzvah. Now, the Shiloh always is what is the Bahag Shita? What is it? What happens if I skip one night? So I skipped tonight. So why can't I come back tomorrow? If I didn't daven Marav last night, so I can't daven Marav tonight? Yesterday was a day, today is a day, tomorrow is another day. So what does the Bahag want? So the world usually says that the Bahag holds that Sfira is mitzvah achas, the whole. Now, I'm not convinced that that's really the operative principle, and we'll see why, of the Bahag. Because my real shaila is that the reason, or is that the result of the reason? In other words, it's just that, is that the driving force why it is that way? Because it's mitzvah achas, or no? As a result of reason X, consequently you have to view it as mitzvah achas, meaning if you left that any part, you're not going to be yaitze. But not that it's inherently mitzvah achas. And what leads me in this direction is always the Sefer HaChinuch. And I discovered something in the Sefer HaChinuch, and I subsequently discovered that Rav Heschel Schechter, Shlita, should be gesund, quoted the same thing from Rav Soloveitchik, that Rav Soloveitchik also learned the Sefer HaChinuch the same way. So let's take a look at Mitzvah Shin Vav in the Sefer HaChinuch. Midinei HaMitzvah. So now he finished his whole discussion of the philosophy and etc. What are the dinim of this mitzvah? The Gemara says in Menachos, "She mitzvah limnoisim b'be'erev k'day sheyehu tmimus." You should count them in the night time so that it should be tmimus. In other words, we have a shiloh. What happens if a person failed to count the surah somewhere in the night time? And Rem is in the morning. So in the morning we count with the bracha, and then we go on counting the rest of the days. The morning we count without a bracha, and then we count the rest of the days with the bracha. Why? Because there's a shayl in the Rishonim, if counting in the daytime suffices, does that constitute tmimus? Because the day got mentioned. I mentioned the eighth day. You're right, halfway through, but I didn't mention the eighth day, so it's tmimus. But tmimus means you need of the night and of the day. Now, the one that's most vociferous on this point is the Rosh. The Rosh, the last piece of Rosh in Masechta Pesachim, makes an assumption that really the Shulchan Aruch does not take to heart. Which is, we're always looking to push Svira later. You know, is it Tzeis HaKochavim yet? It isn't Tzeis HaKochavim. The Rosh says, Ben HaShmoshes, count. Best time to count, Ben HaShmoshes. Why? Because he says that's the ultimate fulfillment of Tumas. I have the whole day now ahead of me. I didn't leave out even 1 second of the day.
Not if it's the previous day.
What?
Not if it's the previous day.
That's what the Rosh says. I didn't leave out 1 second of the day. I presume it's with the Rabbanon, you were allowed to count. Since it's a mitzvah with the Rabbanon, you were allowed to count in Ben HaShmoshes. And the Rosh says, you should count in Ben HaShmoshes. And therefore, the entire day will be, you won't miss 1 second of the day. When Tzeis HaKochavim clicks in, You caught every second. You didn't miss one second. That's what the Rosh writes. So he is the ultimate fan of Tmimus in that regard. So what do we do? So we count the daytime, and we say, well, listen, maybe it is a fulfillment of Tmimus, because some Rishonim say you can count in the daytime. Well, we're not sure. Well, nor am I sure that I have to count all the nights. So again, we have a Svek Sveiko. So, Shemitzum Noisim Mibarach. But the Lachatchil is to count the night, they shoot Tmimus. You have the night and the day. Kweshom Rakosov, Tmimus is Tiana. Well, Omru Zechonel Lebroch, Eim Osai, Hain Tmimus. When is it Tmimus? Bizman Shemaskal Mibarach. You start in the night time. When we come back and peer Shom Beforshim, Shem Shochach Bolimonam Mibarach. Suppose you fail to count in the nighttime. Suppose you fail to count in the nighttime. Mona lemocha kol hayom. So the whole day you can make up for it. V'yesh amur. This is the bar. So we should shochach v'lay mona yom echad. Is that omitted? You failed to count the day. That's it. It's all over. You blew it. Come back next year. He starts off saying kulam mitzvahachas. But if that's what he wanted, so that's right where he should have stopped. But what does he go on to say? And since he forgot one day, there's no, he doesn't have a way of having a cheshbon of the number of days. So what does he want there? If the whole month is mitzvah achas, he orders mitzvah achas and go home. That's diuk number one. So this was the Baha. Dula yehoyidu moreinu shebedoreinu l'svarazu. And the gdoyle yador of his dar did not agree with this. This is the Taisvis and the Tor b'shem Rav Haigon. The Rosh, they didn't agree. And the Mishnah Shochach Yom Echad, Yomar. Now this is a big chiddush that we do not do this. Emes Hoyakach, Emes Hoyakach. Yesterday was 9. Tonight's the 10th. Yesterday was 9. We did a Moira Achirim Kol Yisrael. What did I leave out here? Give me one second. Yayma. So what does he want? To Mayna Acherim Imko Yisrael. It's a very poetic statement, you know. I ate matzah on the night of Pesach. I believe it was Imko Yisrael, you know. I davened this morning. It was also Imko Yisrael. So what does he want? This is for writing poetry. It's appeared. It's Imko Yisrael. So I think that these two diukim are the essence of the Sefer HaChinuch's approach. That the problem, according to the Bahag of the person that skipped the night, Harei Kol HaChesbon Botel Mimeno. I want to get up, and I want to say tonight's the 20th night of Sfira. Okay. So, if you want to get to 20, you have to have 19 behind it. 1, 2, 3, then tonight is 20. If I don't have 19 behind it, on what basis am I declaring it 20? So I believe the way he understands the Bahag is that the days are ultimately subjective. It's because I counted one, I counted two, so the next one is 3. If I left out something, so how am I claiming 20? I don't have the whole binyan till 20. I didn't get there. So I can't declare 20 without having declared a 19, and 19 I didn't declare. So now I'm stuck. I can't declare 19 tonight because it's not what it's about. Tonight I have to declare 20, but I can't declare 20 because I can't call it 20 because I didn't count 19. That's the way, so the Bahag says the counting is subjective. each person establishes his own framework.
Is it a question of what counting is? Is counting like, you're counting 10, there's 10 numbers, say them all, but is he saying a count is really n plus 1, you know, in whatever way, count means add 1 to it, and like if it didn't count, the different, and why would that be the same? Right? In other words, you can say counting is, whatever yesterday is, count 1, and do that till you hit 10. Well, you can say count is just 10 numbers, and you got to say them all over 10 nights. It, you know, the way the Rav seems to be saying it, it seems to be it's the last night that you have to base them on. So counting is...
Well, it's all the steps until then. If I didn't count until 19, I skipped before, so the 19 wasn't a 19 either. I couldn't say 19.
Right, so the other side would say, it doesn't matter. This, you know, you knew you were counting 10. The count was established.
We'll see. Let's... That's why I believe he ends when he explains the Bali HaTosfos. He says Umayna Achirim Im Kol Yisrael. What he means to say is the following. What he means to say is that the framework is an objective framework. It has nothing to do with me. If Klal Yisrael counts 20 tonight, tonight's the 20th night. Makes no difference where I was, whether I'm in space or. I was aware, I wasn't aware, it's all irrelevant. All irrelevant. What's relevant is, Klal Yisrael says tonight is the 20th night, it's the 20th night. Im Kol Yisrael. So I can count 20 tonight. Why? Because God's Klal Yisrael, all the Klal Yisrael is counting, it says it's 20. So if all the Klal Yisrael says it's 20. That's the framework. The framework is an objective framework, it's not subjective.
Why do I have to say last night was 19?
So you should, you know, for yourself, fill in the blank, and not all the editions have this statement. Even Emesh Hoyuk Kach Beloy Brocha. In other words, to fill in that much, but not if that's, as I said, not on all the editions of the Sefer Achinuch. But even if it isn't Lamaisa, so you should fill in yourself. That, in other words, make up for the night you missed by counting. So that's what I think that the Sefer Achinuch means. Now with this, we can understand something. There's a statement in the Shulchan Aruch, which I'm surprised the world doesn't go to town on. It just flows by so simply, without any attention being paid to what it says. This is Siman Tov Pei Tes, Sivches. A person that skipped any of the days, whether it was the first day or any other day, okay, so this is the standard. Now, what does the Shulchan Aruch mean when it says Bein Yom Rishon Bein Bishar Yom? What's the difference? The first day, the eighth day, the 48th day, it's all the same. If it's mitzvah achas, all the nights are one, and I am missing a night, so that's what's the difference. So what does the Shulchan Aruch belaboring the point? Any day you skipped, it's all the same. No, a good kasha. So I say, according to the Sefer Chinuch's explanation of the Bahag, we can understand this very well. Skipping the first night is the most devastating. Why? Because then there's no calendar. Now tomorrow I can't count two, and I can't count one. I can't count one because I'm supposed to count two tonight, and I can't count two because I didn't count one. So I'm a mess. So that's certainly not going to be good. Let's say I counted the first night, and I skipped three other nights. Can I count a night with a bracha? So that could be true. That once I started, I declared one, then I made a calendar. Then 2, 3, all the way to 49 are all a star up on the board. I made a calendar. So now I'm on night 18 and I haven't counted for the last 5 nights, so what? It's still night 18. That's what the Shulchan Aruch has to say. No, that's not the pshat. It's not enough. Whether Bain Yom Rishon, Bain Bishor Yom, that it's not going to help you. In other words, you have to count all the steps to be able to say 20. You have to have all the steps through 19, then you can declare 20. Otherwise, it's Batal Mimino Achashba. So the Shulchan Aruch is also, in fact, picking up L'chayra on this Hezber and the Bahag, because otherwise this line of the Shulchan Aruch defies explanation. You go ask all your Chavarim tomorrow how they learn the stamp shot in this line of the Shulchan Aruch, what the Shulchan Aruch wants. So, it's interesting that we have this machloikus in Sfiras HaOmer. Is the counting subjective? Is the counting objective? Because the truth of the matter is, as the Sefer HaChinuch writes, the period of the Sfiras HaOmer was for what purpose? Was to prepare for Matan Torah. To count the days in anticipation of Matan Torah. Time of preparation for Matan Torah. Now, there are two preparations that were necessary. There's the preparation of each yochid, each individual. The whole fact that Torah, a person can connect to Torah, is something which is beyond our understanding how it could be. Torah is the ultimate spiritual thing in the world. And I'm a boss of a dog. So what's the connection between myself, my physical self, and what represents the Rabbeinu Shalom of this world, the Torah? So there's a chiddush that a person can be connected to the Torah. But what it demands of him is a spiritual preparation. What do we say in davening? Say it in davening. Kachena b'mitzvah secha. We say in chokena b'sar secha. First, we have to be mekadosh ourselves. The person has to sanctify himself. If he sanctifies himself, then we say in chokena b'sar secha. He can ask the Rabbeinu Shalom of the Torah. So that's a very subjective experience. Each individual went out of Mitzrayim and needed to elevate themselves in whatever ways they needed to. Many people did, one person different than another person. So it was a very subjective experience. But there's an objective aspect to it. Right? Was the Vayichad Shom Yisrael Neged Ahar. Rashi says that it was the one place where there was tranquility among the Jewish people. They were Ish Echad B'Leiv Echad. Right, all the other places there was machlokes, there was merivah, tarumas, so she says. But here it was tranquil. The tranquility of Klal Yisrael with each other is an objective thing. It's not subjective. It's not dependent on an individual. It's dependent on the whole tzibur. You need a certain mindset of the tzibur to produce such harmony. And it's obviously difficult to produce, because Rashi says this was the only time in the Midbar that they actually achieved it, was standing at the foot of Har Sinai. Other than that, it was Muhammad Sayyidim. For a moment, there was a hiatus. So that's an objective happening, something which affects the entire tzibur. And the entire tzibur has to relate to themselves as a tzibur. So the subjective and objective aspects to the hachonah, to the preparation for Kabbalah HaTorah. The hachonah of the yochid, the hachonah of the tzibur. And the Sfiras HaOmer, right, there are two parts to it, and there are really two simonim of the Shulchan Aruch for that reason. Simon Tov Pei Tes is all the mitzvahs involved in counting. Siman Tov Tzadi Gimel is all the aspects of the Avelis, the morning part of Sfira. Now, those are two separate dinner. The dinner of the counting is the dinner of the Gemar. That's the dinner of the Gemar. The dinner of the morning, that's based in the Gemara, it's not based in the Medrash. The Torah, I believe, quotes a Rishon, a very unusual Rishon, who usually we associate with the Yonah of Drush, Chumash, Ibn Shu'ab. And Ibn Shu'ab is the one that tells us that they have made a mourning period at this time of the year. Now, the Shulchan Aruch says, what's the reason for this mourning period? He spells out, and they should also as man, Mesul, Talmid Rabbi Akiva. The Talmid of Rabbi Akiva died. When did Rabbi Akiva live, Rabbi Yisrael? When did Rabbi Akiva live? But he died in the 2nd century, in the aftermath of Bar Kokhba's revolution. Somewhere between 133 and 140, he was killed. He was born, he lived 120 years, so he was born in the year 20 of the Common Era, and he lived to approximately 140. 5 years, give or take. 5 years earlier. When from Rabbi Akiva to Chasimas HaTalmud is 300 years. There's not a mention in 300 years, not on the Shas, not in Medrash, that there's a mourning period for Rabbi Akiva. There's hundreds of years afterwards. All of a sudden, we enacted a mourning period for the Talmud and Rabbi Akiva. What would you say if I came tomorrow and I said, Rabbi Yisai, I've been studying Jewish history very carefully, and I have to tell you, in the year 1017, there was this great catastrophe which took place, and I think that we have to make a day of mourning for it. One day, forget 5 weeks, one day of mourning. So you would tell me, listen, we don't get you. Since the year 1017, Rashi lived, the Rambam lived, the Ramban lived, the Rashba lived, the Mesayzef lived, the Bilgayim lived, and none of them seemed to be too concerned about making this day of mourning for this great catastrophe that happened in 1017. So 1,000 years from now, you show up and you tell me you want to make a mourning day for what took place 1,000 years ago? I mean, if there was a reason to make it, there were enough very great people over across all the generations, the Rambam would have figured it out. So here we come. The earliest is in the 11th century of the Common Era, the 12th century of the Common Era, and 1,000 years after Rabbi Akiva. You know, there was this great tragedy. We should have a mourning period for 5 weeks. What happened there? Where did this come from? So I believe the answer is, I've talked about it on Tisha B'Av, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal spelled it out very, very well in his commentary on the Kinos. And that is that we have one which deals with the destruction of worms and spire, I think, in Wandsbek. So he notes the following. Where did Rashi learn in his youth? Where did Rashi learn? What country did he learn in? Rashi lived in Germany in his youth. Germany was the seat of Torah. That's what a major yeshivas for. The greatest rabbonim lived in Germany. You wanted to learn, you went to Germany. Along came the Crusades at the end of the 11th century. They started and destroyed the yeshivas of Germany. Destroyed the rabbonim, murdered the rabbonim of Germany, and destroyed whatever the ksavim, to the extent that there's barely anything left of the rishonim of Germany. In Rashi's lifetime, where is the seat of Torah? France. Rashi is a descendant of the Balei HaTosfos, Provence rises. France becomes the seat of Torah. You want to learn? You go to France to learn. Best place of Europe. Wiped off the map. and with all the historical impact that it's going to have, 500 years later, 600 years later, will play out. Where does the reform movement begin? In Germany. Why? Because the level of Torah had been reduced to such an extent that all types of foreign ideas could penetrate. It was never to recover from the devastation of the Crusades. Never to recover. So, this is what took place in the time, the end of the Gaonic period, and the start of this period of the Rishonim. And our forefathers related very, very well, our ancestors, to two things, I believe. One, to the difficult situation that they were in. And in fact, this paralleled the situation that Rabbi Akiva found himself in after the demise of his 24,000 Talmidim. The Gemara says in Yevamos, "Vayayilam shamin." There was a dearth of Torah. Achabor Rabbi Akiva, Yitzhar of Asinu Shabidorim. Till Rabbi Akiva came to the great Rabbonim of the Dorim. These are the five Tanayim that are constantly in the Mishnah. Shem ben Yoichai, Ramey, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yisrael, Walazo ben Aroch. They are the ones that, the backbone of the Mishnah. And this emerged from Rabbi Akiva. So we've been there before. But unfortunately, in our time, we're at the same point. Right? In the year 1945, things did not look very good for the Jewish people. They looked pretty bleak. We were physically shattered, we were spiritually shattered. So how are we going to pick ourselves up? So they related very well to the catastrophe of Rabbi Akiva. They related their catastrophe and what had happened at their time to the catastrophe which struck Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was a glimmer of hope, right? It's now 450, 60 years after the Churban, and V'hoya v'yayim ahu, the Torah is rising. Rabbi Akiva catches fire. 24,000 Talmidim. Half of a fellow. And what happens in 5 weeks? It's all shattered. It's gone. So, what's our future? V'yayim shalom. There was nobody to carry the torch of Torah. What's going to happen with us? So they related to the tragedy of Rabbi Akiva very well. And there's another aspect to it. And this is something I discovered in the Chido. I discovered it, I lost it, and I rediscovered it. But when I rediscovered it, I photocopied it and pasted it into one of my books, my swarm. And I shouldn't lose it again. When did Rabbi Akiva's new yeshiva open? When did the new yeshiva open? Now, that we know that on Lag BaOmer, right, the Rambam says, "Umar b'tzas b'simcha." What's the mar? Why? Because, as the Shulchan Aruch said, that man mesu, but on Lag BaOmer they stopped dying. Right on Lag BaOmer, the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva started to die. Shas poskum milomus. So the Rama even writes, "Mabmuk d'mok tas b'simcha." Very strange thing. What would I grew up with you? Do if you received, you got an email. One of your friends just lost both of his parents tragically at the same time. It's had Shiva for both of them. And he's getting up from Shiva tomorrow morning. And he sends you an email. And the email says, "Listen, come to my house at 11 o'clock tomorrow night. We're having a bash. The music's going to be great. The food is going to to first rate. The booze is going to flow and whatever. It's going to be levedig the whole night. What would you think? The guy's possessed. So what's with him? Flipped out of his mind. Yeah, you're getting up from Shiva. What, so that's the time to dance? When you get up from Shiva, it's the time to dance? Even if there would be no dinshleisha. We have this concept in Motzei Tisha B'Av that there's no boss of a yom, but nei evel shel yom. If we were truly an evil in the yom, so we would think of boss of a yom and Motzei Tisha B'Av. So what's the pshat in this simcha? And also the world has a kasha. What does it mean that poskum ilomus? If the pshat is, you can learn two pshatim, that all the Talmidim died, so then what's the simcha of poskum ilomus? The poskum ilomus, there was nobody left to die. Elamai, you could learn another pshat, that there was some Talmidim left, and they were poskum ilomus, but none of them were people of stature that could have carried the Torah for the generation. Could learn like that. But what's the simcha? You know, poskum ilomus, okay, so where's the simcha? So the Chidor writes that Rabbi Akiva started his new yeshiva, I don't believe in the first year, right, the day right after when they died, when they were dying, but he ultimately opened the new yeshiva on Lag BaOmer. That's what the Chidor writes. The new yeshiva opened on Lag BaOmer. So Lag BaOmer then was a time that symbolized the revival of Klal Yisrael. We came to the brink, and what happened? There's Haim Haim Shalamidu Torah Bo'ez Hashod, these five Talmidim. And we arrived at the time of the Gaonic period, and the Torah was thriving. The yeshivas were flourishing. Where did this come from? It came from Rabbi Akiva. But Rabbi Akiva did work. We see, 1,000 years later, we still felt its effect. So, what they said to themselves, we've been here already in this spot before. It's a tough spot to be in. Rabbi Akiva was also in this spot, but we bounced back from this spot. It didn't knock us out. It knocked us down, but it didn't knock us out. So this was the relationship to Rabbi Akiva that could identify with this tragedy, and they longed for the renewal that Rabbi Akiva represented to. They longed for the renewal. So I believe that's why Lag BaOmer is a simcha, because it symbolizes the revival of Klal Yisrael. In the darkest hours of the history of Klal Yisrael, and Rabbi Akiva's was one of those dark periods, the time of the Crusades was another one of those dark periods, the Holocaust was another of those dark periods. In the darkest hours of Jewish history, it was the ability to revive ourselves. Rabbi Shalom has given us that koyach. He likes to shochach the pizara. And Mamela, they also enacted Lag BaOmer then as a day to connect with what Rabbi Akiva did. That he established his new yeshiva, and they began to flourish, and this in fact succeeded. Now, just to put in perspective how bad the situation was, 100 years after the martyrdom of Rabbi Akiva was Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Rabbeinu HaKadosh authored the Mishnah, or compiled the Mishnah, I should say, with authorship. Some things, yes, there were Mishnayos which were already established before, but he certainly edited the Mishnah. This takes place. He had the ability to gather Chachma Yisrael because, as Shas tells us, he had very good political relationship with Antoninus. We know today that it's Marcus Aurelius. And one of the digs they discovered, his name was Marcus Aurelius Antoninus. That has been discovered in one of the digs, the ancient digs. But history has recorded him as Marcus Aurelius, and we recorded him as Antoninus. Rabbeinu HaKodesh had an excellent relationship with him, which produced a period of tranquility, the first period of tranquility in 200 years between Rome and Klal Yisrael. So we took the opportunity to gather Chachmei Yisrael and to write the Mishnah. Who was his greatest Talmud? Is Rav Chiya. And what does the Gemara tell us about Rav Chiya? Gedolei Ma'aseichiyah. Rav Chiya spent his time, much of his time, establishing chadorim for children, young children, to learn Mishnayos and Chumash. Rav Chiya was the Gadol Hador. A Mishnayos that didn't go through his yeshiva, did not have a stamp of approval, was not considered authoritative by Amoraim. Was dubious. So he was the Gadol Hador. And Shas tells us he went around from place to place, founding chadorim, and Gedolei Ma'aseichiyah. That his portion is so great. Shas says that one can't even, his place in Gan Eden is so special that even great people of the Amoraim, whatever, had no right even to look at it. His chelek in Olam Haba, where he was. So here we have Rav Chiya. This is 100 years after Rabbi Akiva, and the situation is so bleak. There are no chadorim. No place in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi HaKodesh is writing the Mishnah, and the Stam kid growing up in Eretz Yisrael can't learn Bereishis Bara Elokim. So we saw this at our time. Yeah. Right? Rav Aaron Kotler was undoubtedly, he was from the greatest Talmid HaChacham of the Dor, without any doubt. Right? He established the yeshiva and his shiurim and his godless. And he spent the days every week raising money for the Chinuch Atzmoi, so that the children that went there to Israel after the war should be able to learn Torah. Exactly the model of Rabbi Chiya. The Gadol Hador is busy. This is how bleak the situation was. And yet, Klal Yisrael bounced back from it. So this was, I think that's the pshat in the Ktzas Simcha of Lag BaOmer. It's a day which symbolized the eternity of Klal Yisrael. We'll hold it at this point, or at least.